If you or someone you know is struggling with alcoholism or addiction, do not hesitate to reach out for help. You can find numerous free resources on our website, thebeginagainpodcast.com, and there are tons of resources and support networks available online, in person, or just a phone call away. You don't have to face this challenge alone. Welcome to the Begin Again Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Menkes. On the Begin Again Podcast, we delve into the inspiring journeys of individuals who have overcome alcoholism and addiction and emerged as true trailblazers in entrepreneurship, business, sports, and beyond. Through authentic, uplifting, and profound conversations with our guests, we aim to shatter the stigma surrounding addiction and demonstrate that recovery can be a catalyst for remarkable success, strength, and resilience. We firmly believe that by listening to these accounts, you will be empowered to unlock your own potential, instigate positive change in your life, and contribute to the creation of a better world. So, get ready to be inspired and embark on your own personal journey of growth with the Begin Again Podcast. Welcome back to the Begin Again Podcast. I'm your host, Gary Menkes, and with us today is TV personality, talent judge, choreographer of the stars. He's the author of his moving and personal memoir about his life of alcoholism, rehab, and sobriety titled, If I'm Being Honest. He's the host of the really fantastic podcast, If I'm Being Honest podcast. He's a loving family man. You can tell by what he posts all the time, which I love and I can relate to. He's a rabid sports fan, which I don't know if you can tell my background. I like sports a little bit myself. But maybe most importantly, he recovers out loud. Dan Carradi. Dan, thanks for being here. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. It's awesome to be here. Awesome to join you. And yeah, I mean, as soon as we opened this call, I started looking around and I was like, okay, we got a sports fan. And of course, my eyes went right to Mariano Rivera there. And I was like, yeah. Hell yeah.
There you go. You know, he's Mariano Rivera. He's one of the best to do it. But what's his superpower, right? He's got a short memory.
Oh, like, gosh. I mean, you have to, right?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, Dad, we were just talking offline, you know, and I say it, I try not to repeat myself, but the people we meet in this community of ours is Recover Out Loud. The term Recover Out Loud is fairly new to me since I got here, but it's incredible. It's just so, it's super powerful. Just meet people like yourself. You and I connected. You answered right away to come on. I'm so happy you're here. Can't wait to hear your story and share with the audience here.
Yeah, man. You know, the whole recovery community, it has blown my mind since day one. You know, because I was so disconnected and felt so alone for so long when I was first in rehab and these guys were coming up to me and trying to talk to me and putting their arm around me. And I was like, what is wrong with these people? What do they want? You know, thinking, because this is how I thought for so long, what do they want from me?
Right.
You know, 100%. They didn't want anything from me. They just wanted to help.
I know.
But I didn't get that, you know? And even when I was first out of rehab, and by the way, I loved that.
Yeah.
I was always so hesitant. And when I first got out of rehab and I started going to meetings and you know, meeting sober buddies and stuff. And it took me a while to wrap my head around the fact that all of these people are just, they're just trying to help.
Yeah.
They're just there for you. They're not there to take anything from you.
No.
You know, it was so strange, but so incredible.
No, I relate to all of that. You know, when I first came in, right? Like I was chip and I might still have a bit of a chip on my shoulder. He may be a little quieter though, but like, you know, skeptical, didn't trust anyone. Right. And then when someone comes, a grown man comes, hey, here's my phone number. Call me tomorrow. When every instinct that I've known forever is like, call you tomorrow, phone number, like, get away from me. Like, you're right. Who are these people? You know, what, give me a break. Where, you know, something's coming. The jig's going to be up. I'm going to figure this out any second now. Like, but the joke was on me, you know, and I struggled too. You know, I went to rehab, Dan, in 2002 and my sobriety date's 2006. And so I was in and out of the rooms for 4 years, you know, really battling. And it was a battle, you know, all those sayings, you know, a belly full of booze and a mind full of rehab, a mind full of sobriety and AA is a really difficult place to be. And that was me. And it wasn't until I said, you know what, I was also never going to go back to AA also, like, you know, I'll have to stop drinking, you know, within this time, this 4 years. I'm like, it's clear I'm going to have to stop drinking at some point, but I'm definitely not going back there. And lo and behold, I'm on May 13th, 2006, I was given the gift of surrender. I called New York City Intergroup. I went to a meeting and I just said, my way is not working. These people look happy. Whatever they tell me to do, I'm going to do it for the first time in life for this stubborn, like, and dad, like, I am wired. Like, if you tell me to go that way, I am just wired to go the other way.
Did you so you went to rehab and then all those years later is when you finally
Yeah.
got sober.
Right.
But from going to rehab, did you live all those years knowing you had a drinking problem but thinking you were going to figure it out?
It was clear. It was clear to me. I was also the last one to realize it. Like everyone around me knew that I was a raging alcoholic, and I have sort of the rap sheet to show it, and I say this a lot too in reflection that, take away all the trouble I got. I got a lot of trouble. I got in trouble early. But you take all that stuff away, right? Like it's the little things. Like I was talking to a friend who's trying to stop drinking as well. He came to me recently and he went to a concert last night. He's like, it was weird, but I got through it. And I remember going to a Yankee game like my first year and literally sitting in the stand. And I love the like seriously have a love for the game of baseball. I played it. I love baseball. I love all sports, but baseball is probably my favorite. And I sat in Yankee Stadium and I stared at everybody drinking beers the entire game. And it's that mental, and this is, guy in my 20s, like this is sick, sick thinking for a guy, for a 20 something year old guy. So again, you take all that stuff away. It's the mental obsession. I thought differently. I was a sick guy in that sense. So yes, to answer your question, I did know it, but I fought it. I wanted to figure it out. I wanted to drink safely, and I did everything else. Like, all right, I won't drink vodka. I won't drink, whiskey. I'll drink light. I drink 34 Coors Lights. Like just ridiculous. So I tried everything, and it didn't work. So yes, in that time, I knew there'd be some time I have to stop drinking. But again, like I said, not to repeat myself, I wasn't going back to AA. But AA completely saved my life, and start working on ourselves, and you go through this the steps and. I couldn't, I'm also in the camp, Dan. Like, I don't care how you get here. Like, I'm not, if someone asked me how I got here, like, Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life. And I would hate to see people like the same friend I'm talking about. He doesn't really want to go to AA. He wants to stop drinking. And I'm just trying to tell you're missing out so much
I know.
by just going at it alone. Like there's such a self-discovery on the other side of this. You get to work on yourself and there's so many gifts that come along with it.
So, like, even my rehab was a 12-step rehab,
Yeah.
which wasn't by choice. Like, that wasn't by design. We didn't know that's the rehab I was going to. We just found a rehab for me to go, and that was it. But I remember being like halfway through it, and I was on the phone with my wife, and I was like, everyone should go to rehab. Like, everybody, because you learn so much about yourself. It's like, I mean,
Yes.
I was only, two weeks in. But it's like the whole the 12 steps, like you said, the journey of self-discovery. Like, the drinking is what brought us there, but the
Right.
drinking is this much of it.
I know.
It's what you learn about yourself and the process and re-examining all the relationships in your life. And holy cow, I mean, what an amazing experience that
It is.
was.
It is. It's funny you say that about your wife. My girlfriend at the time, who is now my wife, when I first, and she's been through thick and thin. She's seen it all. She's seen the ugly. She's seen the cunning, baffling, the powerful, all of it, and but she's seen me come out of the other side. But when I first started coming in, I read her the 12 steps. I read right in order. And she's like, and she's, let me tell you, she's like super civilian. Like she's the type like sips on a glass of wine and never finishes it. And I still don't get those type of
Oh,
people.
gosh. Mine
But
too.
yeah. Amazing, right? But I read her the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and she's like, wow, I think everyone should probably do the 12 steps. And I was like, yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think that's great. You're sitting in a rehab 2 weeks in, you're like, and you're telling your wife, like, everyone should go to rehab.
You need to come
But
here.
it's true, right? Like that's their, people that do try to white knuckle it, whatever you want to call it, and just abstain from the drink or the drug. They're missing out on all the gifts that come with it about the self-discovery, like we just said, and finding a higher power for me. Like I always believed in a higher power. I always had my God. I was always praying to him, foxhole prayers, get me out of this one. I won't do it again. And I do it the next night or do it the next week. And but I always did feel like I had a relationship with my with my higher power, who I do call God, but it's so different now. And it's kind of back to what we were saying about, our instincts, and some gentleman says, or gives you a hug, hey, what are you in, we're built to be like, get away from me, right? Like, no, I don't want your phone number, But you find that our higher power. And now I'm still, even to talk about this stuff now, like if you told me 18 years ago that we'd be talking about God and spirituality, which is what I chase today, like what happened to him? Like what happened to me? Something awful must have happened. But no, it's, it actually brings me to that term, a grateful alcoholic. When I was early in Dan, and someone said, I'm a grateful alcoholic, I was like, I was calling BS. I was like, all right, you know what? Yeah. One thing, we're here, it's good we're here, but BS on the grateful alcoholic part, but guess what? Just like all the other signs in those rooms, like it makes sense to me, because if I wasn't an alcoholic, I wouldn't have been on this path that I'm on today. I wouldn't have been on this journey of self-discovery, like we keep saying, and learning about ourselves. And now we're at a place where we can help other people. Again, same thing. Like if you told me I was here to try to help some other person, I'd be like, man, something really bad. He must have got like piped in the head or something, and his brain is broken. But that's not
It's
the
funny
case.
what you say too about that whole grateful alcoholic thing, because I'm in this place now. Like I'm almost 3 years now
Yeah,
sober,
in
right?
May, right? We're May.
And yeah, May 12th.
May 12th, right? Hey, wow.
And I wake up every day with this like childlike freeness
Yeah.
about me. And it's like I keep waiting for it to go away, and that's still here
Embrace
every
it.
day. And I'm so grateful
Yeah.
for how I feel and the day ahead of me and everything that is around me. And I'm like, man, I don't think I would feel this excited about it, this
Yes.
grateful about it, if I didn't go through all that ugly.
Yes.
So, for some of the people I hurt around me, for what my poor wife had to go through, of course. I wouldn't want it back for that. But all these other parts of it, I'm kind of like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Because this, I have this,
Right. No, I totally agree. And yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly right for me. Like we say this a lot too. I've heard this in the rooms. Like you could put, property of AA or property of my sobriety on like, everything that I own, right? Like this and that, and whatever. All the material stuff. But for me, and you could probably relate this because you're kind of saying it now, but I could put that on like love I have. I could put that on integrity. I could put that on, I'm accountable today. I show up today. I can answer the phone today. My kids, I say this, I try not to repeat myself, but my wife, on my 10-year anniversary, Dan gave me a card. She makes a big deal of my anniversary, and she gave us on my 10-year anniversary. She wrote me a card and said, "Just think, we're so proud of you. Just think, if you didn't get sober, our two little babies wouldn't be here right now." And so I owe everything to my sobriety.
Everything.
Yeah. And it's beautiful, and it's a journey. It's there's no like, there's no graduating, right? There's no like, I hope I get there and then. It's not to keep bringing up all these old sayings, but like, I wish you a long, slow recovery. Like I used to call, like, what is that? That sounds awful to me, but it's beautiful. Now I get it, and now I'll wish every like I wish you a long, slow, beautiful recovery.
And isn't it strange to you? Probably, I don't know what you were doing with your life personally, professionally, when you were actively using, but like I accomplished quite a bit in my life and I was so unhappy with myself,
Yes.
not proud at all. There was no pride in who I was, what I've done, whose lives I've touched or did not, like, what I did professionally, all of, there was a zero sense of pride in
Yeah.
any of it. And now, on a daily basis, like, and I'm totally comfortable saying, I'm so proud of myself.
Yeah, you should.
And I feel it makes me feel so good about what I'm doing as a dad, as a husband, as a person, as a human being. And then, yes, professionally and all of those other things. It's just, God, it's just, it's incredible. But
Yeah.
that just that pride factor, it changes everything.
Yeah. No. Me too. I although I do admit I do struggle sometimes. I still have like we mentioned offline, like imposter syndrome or some self-esteem, Because my muscle memory, like for a long time, was, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not good looking enough. I'm not enough. Everything. I'm just not enough, and I kind of drank that way too. Like I drank sort of insatiably. It was, ugly, right? But today, like I step back, man, look where you are. Like you're doing okay, bud. Like doing okay. Put one step forward again today. And like we said, I think offline or at the beginning, like let's help one person today, right? Like let me help. And it's part of my morning prayers too. Like let me help one person today. Again, I keep going back, stuff that wasn't in this being, 18 plus years ago. But you touched upon too, or at least in your book too, about when you were out and you had accomplished an awful lot. You were super successful, right? But it seems that there was this alcoholism underneath that, a lot of people maybe weren't even aware of. Is that accurate?
Nobody other than my wife, nobody was aware of it.
So tell
Everyone
us.
just thought it was like it's part of the deal. Even the people who I drank with just thought like, yeah, but look what he's doing.
Yeah, look at him.
You
He's a
know, so
star.
like he's enjoying his life kind of thing.
So take us back there. How did you take us back to where it started to, you said your wife was aware, but when did it start to sort of get ugly for you internally? And when did you start looking at yourself and looking at your drinking?
Yeah, actually, so it's kind of why I asked you. You went to rehab, but then you had all those years before. It's when I recognized for the first time, I started to say, "Whoa, dude, you got a situation here." Was when my son, who's our second child, when he was 9 months old, and he got really sick, and he was in the hospital, and they could not figure out what was wrong with him, and to the point where they, as a parent, all you want is he's going to be okay, right? That's what that. Just answer that question. Everything else is fine,
Figure
and
everything
they
else
would.
out.
They wouldn't answer it. And they put us in isolation. And I mean, when you have doctors kind of running around and we need to do this, we need to try this test, we need to try this test, and they can't figure anything out. And then they're throwing out words like leukemia and all this different stuff. And like we didn't know what was happening. And they wouldn't even promise us that like he's going to make it through the day, right?
Oh my God.
And those couple of weeks while he's in the hospital, I convinced my wife every night that she should stay in the hospital. He's more comfortable with you so that I could go home and drink. And I started to say, dude, your son, this might be it. And you're choosing to go home and drink than to be with him. And that's when I first started to say, like, this is worse than I thought. It's like I knew I drank too much. But now this problem is much runs much deeper if you're willing to push your son aside. Now, I drank for 6 more years after that. But that was the first time I started saying, you got to figure this thing out. You need to do something about this. Same kind of thing. That's when I started trying to do things, but I mean nothing. It was a joke. It was like any kind of obstacle I tried to throw up to slow myself down, I barreled right through it.
Yeah, we can. Well, we can. And then we start justifying everything. We're professionals at justifying all that stuff. I hadn't had a exact experience like yours, like you just said, and that is super difficult. I can't even imagine. But I and like our listeners, can relate to, figuring a way to get out of here so I can be alone for a little bit and I can hit my, I can get my drink on. And that's where our minds take us. And that is, it runs our lives, right? It runs our minds and it runs our lives. And we just can't wait to get to the next drink. And we don't even really realize it.
And it was amazing. Like there was some truth to what I was saying, right? It's my son. He was a mama's boy. He loved to lay on my wife and whatever. So I just fed into that and I convinced myself this is okay. He would rather be with her. He'll be more comfortable with her overnight than with me. So this makes perfect sense. Go home and get loaded. You know, it's Like the fact that I could talk myself into that night after night after night. And you know, that's the sickness. It's like
Yeah,
I
it
would
is.
talk myself into it. I would feel like shit that I had done that. Go home, drink anyway. Wake up and say, I'm not going to do this today. Today, I'm going to be different. I'm going to stay with him. It's the same thing all over again.
Right. Oh, I can relate to the same thing all over again, right? Like that was me too. You know, and that brings up the cunning, baffling, and powerful part because it is, it baffles us and it baffles the people closest to us. Like, you know, and there's the part in the book too, you know, about the jaywalker. And because my girlfriend, she would, again, my wife now, like she just didn't get it. Like she just didn't understand my behavior and how I could be one way and then a drop of a dime be a totally different person and like go off, fly off the rails and, you know, not come home and like not know where I am. Like, and then just be like, no, it's no big deal. And so the part in the book about the jaywalker, like that really hit me. You know, the jaywalker, he walks across the street, he gets, you know, he gets tapped by a car. He's like, all right, don't do that again. The next day he walks a car, he gets hit by a, you know, a bus, right? And he's like, goes to the hospital, he gets out of the hospital, he goes, you know, I'll never, you know, I'm gonna go to the crosswalk, you know. And what does he do? The next very next day, cross gets hit by, you know, a truck, whatever. I'm paraphrasing, but I read that, I was like, oh my God, this is me. And I handed it to her. I was like, look, I think this is, you know, and she's like, yeah, wow. All right, it's in this book. You know, again, she's a civilian. She's like, all right, it's in this book, but you know, it's for other, especially people closest to us, right? It's just like, can you stop doing what you're doing?
And I mean, our wives are very similar, as you said. Like my wife, she can, you know, milk one glass of wine all night, not even finish it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Finish that already, you know? But I when she, because of that's how she operates, she would see me operate in every other part of my life, so disciplined.
Yeah.
So dedicated to whatever else I was doing that when she would try to approach me with how I was drinking, I would point, you know, being manipulative like I
Right.
was,
Yeah.
I would point to all these other things
Yeah.
to distract her and convince her I got this, right? It's like when the time comes when it's really important,
Right.
I'll control this thing the way it needs to be controlled,
Right.
you know? And she had no reason not to believe me
Sure.
when you look at everything else,
Yeah.
right? It's
No, and I'm sure you're, you know, super convincing too. And you're right. And she does know you, and you know, you're a rock star in her eyes, and actually to many other people's eyes for that matter. But right. So you could see that. You could totally understand all of it. But so you said you were out there like that for 6 years. So you, this battle, right? It's got to be starting to get worse, right? Because it doesn't get better. But this internal battle with yourself, but you're out there for 6 years, but where does it turn? You know, where do you get, you know, throw your hands up, or what happens?
you know, just over those years, the loneliness, the isolation, you know, just all of that grew. And honestly, like the hatred for myself just really started to fester.
Yeah.
And I would just distract myself with, you know, I certainly had an entitlement complex, because I, as you said, the things I was doing. And so, you know, my career kept going well. I was making more money, you know, the travel, the everything, you know, so the vacations we would go on, all that kind of stuff. So I
Yeah.
just kept throwing up pretty little things around me to distract everybody else, but also to distract myself.
Sure.
But inside that, the ugly was really growing at a bad rate. And I started to give myself permission, right? It's like I tried all these different things as we talked about, and nothing worked. Nothing slowed me down. If anything, it accelerated, right? It's like I would try something, I would fail, and so then I would accelerate how much I was drinking. And I finally got to the point where I threw my hands up and gave myself permission to drink. It said, you know what? You're not going to be able to control this, but that's okay. And like so many of us, I convinced myself that I was different.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you look at what you're doing.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a problem, but you're different. You're going to manage it.
Right.
But then when the pandemic hit, and all those pretty things that I put up around me, you know, it didn't matter anymore, right? It's like I couldn't get on a plane and go fly to Europe to shoot my television show. I couldn't go on the fancy vacation. I couldn't do any of that anymore. I was just at home and I couldn't even look in the mirror. It's like, so all the distractions gone. Now it's this guy, you know, and I always say, now I was just a dad and just a husband. And I purposely use that word just because that should be everything, right? But now I was just that and I couldn't handle it. And instead of taking that time to, you know, maybe look inward and try to reflect and figure something out, I just dove into the bottle. You know, and by 5 months, 6 months into the pandemic or whatever, I was drinking 24 hours a day. You know, it's like I went from being a heavy night drinker to, all right, now I'll drink around 4, to drinking at noon to drinking as soon as I got out of bed. And so all that discipline and everything that had always existed, it was all out the window.
So that's wow, that's really interesting because you're stuck at home now, right? So, like you said, you can't escape and you're stuck with Dan, you're stuck with yourself, right? And I love that, you know, you throwing your hands up is like, I got this. And I so relate to the progression of it, right? The same thing, you know, started on the weekends, then, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And, you know, again, I started early, you know, but then I'll find a way to, you know, like, you know, drink at noon, right? Or then drink in the morning or drink around the clock and then run, you know, benders. I mean, they probably should have gave me a nickname Bender because like that's what it was like, you know, that's how I went. And the isolation, like that was so me, like again, the mindset, right? Of this sick alcoholic here. I loved being alone at the end. Like I loved it. I would be out with a group of my best buddies or a bunch of guys from work. And I would Irish exit out, leave them without even saying a word, and go find some dark place, some dark hall, you know, dark bar with a jukebox. And I just love to be alone, you know. And again, this is a young man talking, like it's really sick thoughts. And again, like if I showed you know, all the trouble I've been through, you'd be like, oh wow, this guy's, you know, he's a maniac, he's got a problem. But it's all the other stuff. It's sitting at my desk, you know, after an awful night and telling myself all day, I'm not gonna drink tonight. I'm not gonna drink. I'm not gonna drink. I'm not gonna drink. Like really like that. And then like 12 o'clock, you feel a little bit better, but I'm still not gonna drink. And then 4:30, 5 o'clock, I'm out and I don't go home. Like that is abnormal thinking for a young guy. But so you're stuck at home with yourself and the pandemic, right? And you can't do your usual escapes, which you had, right? And so where do you go from here? So I mean, can't imagine what's happening at home at this point.
Yeah, you know, it was, obviously my wife was watching it. I couldn't even hide it because I no longer looked like myself. You know, from being the guy who even when I all those years as a heavy drinker, I was still up at 6 a.m. going to the gym every morning, sweating it out, you know, and eating healthy and doing all the things I needed to do to control it, that discipline that I had. You know, now all that was gone. I wasn't getting up early anymore. I certainly wasn't eating healthy anymore. She was watching it all go downhill. And she knew I was hiding how much I was drinking. She doesn't, you know, she didn't know how much I was hiding, but she knew that I was hiding. And she would just talk to me about, hey, like, you gotta rein this in a little bit. And so I would sort of for a couple of days. And when I say rein it in, I mean, you know, a couple at noon instead of 5, you know, and then hold off until 3:30 or 4 before I had my next one. And like, and then not really turn it up until the kids were asleep, kind of thing. That was reining it in, you
I
know.
get it. I get it.
But again, I could only do that for so long. And I got to the point where I was drinking all day long and I wasn't showing up for myself, for my kids, for my wife or whatever. And I couldn't get out of bed the one day. Literally, I was red. I was this big, eyes bloodshot, and couldn't physically get out of bed. And my daughter, who I was always going 100 miles per hour with her every day. everything she always wanted to do. Let's go out and play. Everything, even when I was drinking, I was still outside playing with them, you know. She walked into my room with a look of fear on her eyes. She looked terrified and just asked, you know, "Daddy, what's wrong? Are you okay?"
Oh boy.
And it was just that moment
Yeah.
that I just said, "What? You can't do this, man. You can't do this." I was okay doing it to myself.
Yep.
And I can't believe I say this, you know, but it's like I was okay doing it to Natasha, my wife. But all of a sudden, I was like, I cannot do this to them.
Yeah.
So I walked down the hall, and this is where we had gotten to. My wife was staying in the guest room at that point because she couldn't stand the sight or the smell of me. You know, at night, she couldn't sleep in the same room because it just reeked of booze.
Sure.
So I walked down the hallway and I said, I can't figure this thing out. I need help. And that was it. That's all she needed to hear, because honestly, I think in about 2 minutes, she was on the phone trying to find the right place. Now, 5 minutes later, I walked back in and I was like, I'm okay.
Hold on, pump the brakes.
I'll figure this out. But it was over, you know, and scarily, you know, as we do, my last day at home, because she found a rehab place, you know, it was going to take, I don't know, however many hours to get me in there, 30 hours or something, once we do all this stuff. And she goes, "This is going to be your last day at home. If you can just be here with us, like just be sober. Just be here with us before you leave. Be here for the kids before you leave." And I said, okay. And I meant it. I meant it because I wanted to be there with them. The guilt that I was feeling inside that I was about to leave my kids for a month was eating away at me.
Yeah, that's hard.
And I said, okay. And 30 minutes later, I pulled up in front of the liquor store. And I sat there, and just like you said, you know, how you used to do like at lunchtime or whatever, don't go in, don't go in, don't go in. I went in,
Yep.
you know, and I started drinking. And I couldn't control it. And I remember telling my wife that story, and she's like, "That doesn't make any sense." And I'm
Right.
like, "I know. It doesn't. It's the last thing I wanted to do, but I couldn't stop myself, you know." And then I was in rehab, like, you know, 30, 40 hours later.
That's amazing. You know, there's a beauty to that story too. It seems like we all have that moment, whether we, you know, so many of us reach out to a higher power, reach out to God, God, please, you know, help me, you know, and you can hear it. I was at a meeting this morning. Someone's a Vietnam vet, excuse me, Vietnam vet. You know, he was drinking at home, kind of similar to you. And he said, God, if you're there, please help me. I can't live this way anymore. And he said, kind of like a snap of the finger, something changed. Something entered his life. But to have, you know, I'm just, you know, because I have two young kids too, you know, and I'm just really picturing you walking down the hall to your wife, this kind of like almost, you know, for me, it was the gift of surrender. Like I gave up, like I just couldn't do it anymore. And you actually, you voice the words, I need help, you know, which, you know, we're similar of age. I'm older than you, but, you know, we didn't ask for help. We were told you don't, you know, you don't tell people your feelings. You don't share this stuff. You man up, you figure it out, you know, like similar to you. You know, I was, you know, I wasn't hitting the gym, but I was very, you know, disciplined guy. Like I was, you know, I'm on the first train out of town into the city. I'm the first one at the desk, you know, like that's my work ethic always until I
So you
was
couldn't,
like,
right?
till I was, you know, waking up at 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, holy shit. You know, like, work started 4 hours ago. I should have been, you know, like, what happened? You know, and then, you know, banging in sick, all of it, you know, like then going AWOL. Finally went AWOL. I had a letter at FedEx to me. I had to sign. It was like being served and said, you know, Gary, if you're alive, you need to contact us. Otherwise, you know, your job's terminated, you know. So I was like, I'm alive and I have problem drinking. And I went, that's when I first went to my rehab in 2002. But you have that moment, right, Dan? You had the moment. And it's your children. My gosh, you know, I'm just thinking of my own kids, like you said. But it's the cunning and baffling part, like, right? Like it had its grips in you. It had its grips in me, you know. And when I read the book, The Obsession to the obsession to drink alcohol will be lifted. I was, again, it was another one I was calling BS. I was like, that's impossible for this. I hope I can figure something out how to navigate all of this and not drink, but that's never going to leave me. And guess what? I woke up one morning like, holy cow, like the obsession to drink right now has been lifted for me, you know? And you have these little mini miracle, not, I shouldn't even say mini miracles. They're miracles like nonstop and off you go, right? So you're sitting in the car. It doesn't make sense to your wife. It doesn't make sense to my wife, but it makes sense to people listening to this podcast. It makes sense to the people in the rooms. It makes sense to the rehab that you went to. I have to ask, what did she say when you came home and, you know, you're hitting the booze?
Disgusted, but she was a driven force at that point.
Yeah.
She was just packing my bags like she was done with me.
Yeah.
I was just ready to get rid of me, understandably so. There wasn't much conversation, right? Other than what are we going to tell the kids? And I sat the kids down. You know, my kids were 7 and 9 at the
Right, right.
time. I didn't want to lie to them, but at the same time, how much were they going to fully understand? So I sat them down and explained to them that daddy needed to go away for a little while to learn how to be healthy. And just try to understand, you know, how to be healthy. And I said to them, I said, like, you know how like daddy likes to work out. Daddy works out. That's really good for him, you know. But you guys always see daddy always drinks a lot of wine as well, doesn't he? You know? They said, yeah. And my son asked the most obvious fact. He goes, well, if that's not good for you and you work out all the time, then why do you do it? I'm like, yeah. Why do I do
Wisdom of a 7-year-old, right? It's
it?
amazing.
I said, well, that's what I'm going to go try to figure out,
Yeah.
you know? And that was it. And they actually took it pretty well. They didn't really know what it meant.
Yeah.
You know, and off I went and I drank on my way to rehab,
Yeah.
right? I drank a few beers in the car. It's like that last hurrah.
Right. Yep.
You know, and I don't use, you know, just to go back really quick, I
Sure.
don't use my addiction, the disease, as an excuse for what I did.
No, same here.
I don't try to excuse my behavior. I try to explain it that way.
Sure.
It's still my responsibility. I own it,
Yep.
man. I own it.
Same here, Dan.
But I try to explain it that way, you know, but like the fact that I would be in the car on my way to rehab, and I'm like, and I'm still pounding three beers on the way there. Like, what are you doing? Like, what? You know, but that seemed totally normal
Totally
to me,
rational,
you know? And we
like
pulled up
something
to
you
that
do.
rehab place, and on the way to rehab, I'm giving my wife like the checklist of all the things she needs to do at the house. Can you imagine? Like, she must have wanted at full speed down the highway, she must have wanted to throw me out of the car.
Just like, all
It's like
right,
I'm like, you need to
go,
do this and you
look at
need to
this.
do this. It was like, oh my God. But we pulled up and I was afraid to get out of the car
Yeah.
because I didn't think she was coming back. Every sign in the way she was acting towards me said she's gone. You know, and even when I said, are you gonna wait for me, like you be here when I get out, she goes, just focus on yourself, you know. That is not, that's what I needed to hear, but that's not what I wanted to hear.
Right, no.
I was terrified to get out of the car, but you know, I without giving me the answer I wanted, you know,
Right.
she forced me to get out of that car, and I got out of that car and I closed the door and she was gone. I mean, she was out of that parking lot before I even made it to the front door of the rehab center.
Wow.
And man, that ate away at me. It's like I laid there, and this is that miracle that you were just talking about. I'm going to tell you. I checked in. You go through intake, the most humiliating experience of my life, having to strip down, you know, having to go through all of that, you know, because the whole time I'm like, how did this happen? Me. How
Right.
did I end up here with everything that I have? You know, how did I get here? How am I stripping naked for this guy? You know,
Yeah,
like,
sure.
but I laid in bed that night. You know, I get into the detox and I go upstairs and I lay in bed. I'm in a room by myself and I'm just staring at the ceiling. Mind's going a mile a minute, feeling guilty about what I'm doing to the kids, leaving them. even though it was the best thing I ever did for them.
Right.
I'm feeling guilty about that, terrified that my wife's going to leave me, shame for all the people that are going to find out about this. And I just looked up at the ceiling, and you can call it what you want. But I said, I give up. I give up. And I woke up the next morning with the feeling that I mentioned earlier to you, this sort of carefree. I did not recognize it. I just knew that I felt better. And I was kind of like, all right, so what do we do today? And it all changed. All of that shame, that guilt, that fear, that burden that I had carried around, those next 30 days were the best 30 days that I had lived in years.
Amazing.
Years.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was going to rehab thinking, my life is over. I'm never going to have fun again.
Yep.
They're going to teach me how not to drink. That's what I'm going to learn here. I'm going to learn
Amazing.
how not to drink. And my life's going to suck, but at least I won't drink for my kids and my wife. That's what I thought walking through those doors. Those next 30 days, glorious. And I mean it. Like I was loving life in that place. Almost to the point where I think my wife was kind of pissed because we would get on the phone and she'd be like, so yeah, she didn't even want to talk to me, right? But she'd be like, how is everything? Babe, this place is fantastic. It's this, that. It's like deep down and fairly so. I think she wanted me to be a little like punished in there,
Sure.
you know?
Fair.
And I was not. I loved it. I loved the whole experience. And as I said, those guys came and they put their arm around me and started talking to me. And, you know, this had to be the second or third day. The most important thing, these guys said, listen, there is no reason you can't be a first-time winner. There is no reason. They're like, we're in here for the third, fourth, fifth time.
Right.
We all made the same mistake. You know, we learned the tools while we were in here. But when we got out, eventually we started getting lazy, going back to our normal life, thinking we could handle it. One thing led to another. We started drinking again. We ended up back in here. You can be a first-time winner. They drove that into my head, and I'm so thankful for that because it was strange. They were so determined for me to be successful.
Yes.
And so I dove in and was just like, what? Let me soak up everything I can possibly soak up in here so I can walk out of here ready to just get after life.
I look at afterlife. Love it.
And that was that, man. It's like my wife pulled back up. She came back, which surprised me because it's not like we were having great conversations on the phone while I was there. You know, it's like our healing had not even remotely begun, right? But she came back and I went home and I was like, I'm going to do this thing, this sober thing, better than I've ever done anything.
Amazing.
And I've been on that path since that day.
It's so beautiful and it's so incredible. It really is. There's so many parallels too, though, Dan. Like I forgot as you're speaking, when I was going to that rehab, when my work was calling, it was my girlfriend, who's now my wife. She's the one who found me the rehab. Like same thing. She came right over. She on a computer. Like in 10 minutes, she had the spot. And it's just
Yeah.
amazing place. It's called the Miracle on the Mountain. It's upstate New York and St. Christopher's. And she had it. She had it all set. And just like you, when I got there, I remember it's the first time I went to a meeting. It was the first, I got there, I don't know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There was a meeting at 5 o'clock I had to go to. And then I can remember as clear as day when we went on a circle, you had to introduce ourselves. I can remember as clear as day, right this second when it was the first time I ever said Gary, and I'm an alcoholic because I had to say it. And when I tell you, I thought my life was over. I thought my life was over. I said, look at what you did to yourself now. Look at where you are. Like you said, going through the intake, look at where you are now. You know, my life's over. I'm never going to have fun again. probably going to lose my job, lose my career, because, how can I further my career if not being, the old Gary, who, really I was scared, very scary to be around. I was going to lose probably all my best buddies. They're going to probably be gone. But, I just can't drink anymore. Same thing. That's all I did. I came in to just to stop drinking.
Yep.
Little did I know I was in a, like I said, find a higher power. Life's a complete 180 from where it was, 18 plus years ago. Like all of us,
Yeah.
and I love, and you had said this at the beginning about, these people in the rooms in our community, they sincerely, from the bottom of our hearts, their hearts, they want you to win. They want you to succeed. And these guys come in who have actually failed, right? And I think the human mind is to be like, I failed, so why should I help someone else? But that's not what happens around here. That's not what happens. They want you. And I love how they pounded that into your head, but I love how you accepted it, and that's the amazing part too. And I think we said, like I said earlier, we all have these moments, and you said you looked up into the ceiling, right? Call it, doesn't matter what we call it. Doesn't matter how we label it. But you have this moment, you ask for something, you wake up and you have this like new freedom. Like you feel, it's like kind of almost been cleansed by stuff, and you're like, bring it on. And I'm so happy, obviously, that your wife stuck around. She picked you up, and we have, it seems like we have similar ladies in our lives, I gotta tell you. Like, my wife saw things in me that no one else saw, or I certainly didn't see in myself. And if someone else did see something, like, it was long gone, because actions speak louder than words, and my actions over and over were just, not lining up with who I wanted to be, who I was telling myself I was. But in sobriety, we get to really try to match that. We get to actually try to be better people, do the next right thing, right?
Yeah.
And so you come out, your wife picks you up, and you make this oath to her, which I think is so beautiful. I really do. And you get back to your family, and this is, we're talking about almost 3 years ago, correct?
Yeah, almost.
Our kids are similar too. My daughter's 10, my son's 9. And I, again, I've been sober. I've been coming around for a few more, 24 hours, but it doesn't matter, right? I heard someone say that the world record for sobriety is 24 hours, so it doesn't matter.
I love that.
Love that, right? So you come home, right? You get this ride home from your wife. And Dan, your story is so important on so many levels to me. We all have the We all heard the awful, real tough, rough and tough stories, but we need to hear the regular people stories. Like, I think you and I, like my wife likes to say, like, your story is important too, even though, you didn't grow up in the, gangs of LA, if you will. Like, your story is just as important. Our stories are just as important. But
Absolutely.
when
I
does it
think
get to where you want to turn it around?
well, I agree with you. It's like the, we all think that the alcoholic or the addict, the drug addict, whatever, is, the guy brown bagging on the corner,
Right, the Bowery, yeah.
and that's not the case. It's the husband or the wife next door.
Yeah.
It's the guy you work next to. It's unfortunately, it's the mom picking her kids up from school.
It is.
It's all around us.
Yep.
So it's important that we don't have that picture in our head that
Yes.
that's what it is, right? When I was in rehab, they show you different documentaries, different videos, and when you talk about people who are not afraid to recover out loud, Chris Herren was my hero.
Amazing.
And I watched his documentary, and could sort of relate to, first of all, as a sports fan, which we talked about, I was
Yes.
enamored with it, right? Like
Of course.
I was loving
Thank
that.
you.
But I also, I lived in the public eye in the entertainment world on television. So I'm watching this guy who got to the peak of where you can get as an athlete. And when I watched what he went through and his ability to recover and the life he's living now in sobriety, I watched that probably 5 or 6 days in rehab, and I said, "Holy crap,
Yeah.
I can do this too. If he did it
Love it.
and he had that whole life, I can do this."
Yep.
And so that was the first like inspirational moment of, not only am I going to walk out of here and not drink,
Yeah.
I'm going to live a pretty good life. And then, then I started the shame. With every day that went by, the shame sort of fizzled out more and more. And I started to feel like, all right, well, I will not hide this from my family and my friends. I'll tell my family and my friends, hey, I mean, you guys have all seen me drink. I had a problem. I went to rehab. Not going to drink anymore. More days went on, and I said, you know this, I'm not going to hide this from anybody. I'm not going to shout it from the rooftops, but I'm not
Right.
going to hide it from anybody. So that's kind of how I left rehab. But then, when I was like a month or so out of rehab and going to meetings and doing all this, I started to realize how important it was to not lie. I lived a life of lies. Everything, right? I lied about what I ate for lunch. Like
Right.
I lied about everything. And I was so afraid to start lying again because that slippery slope, right? It's like one lie, what's that going to lead to? And if I went back to work and started doing all these different things and everybody knew me as like, yeah, let's go to lunch or let's go to dinner and let's have drinks. And now I'm, oh, what am I going to say? I'm on a new workout program or I'm on a special diet or I'm on antibiotics or like, I'm just going to start lying. And I said, where is that going to end up? Not to mention, everyone's going to be shoving drinks in my face. Have a drink, have a drink, have a drink, whatever. And I said, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it right without the fear of slipping, I just want everyone to know. So I'm just going to say it. I'm just going to put it out there.
Great.
And it was scary to
Yeah.
say it out loud. But the love and support I got after I put it out there was off the charts. It was off the charts.
Amazing.
So it was like, that was the best decision I ever made. And things like the book and stuff, like that started without knowing I was writing a book. Like, they tell you to journal when you're in rehab. And I was like,
Yeah.
freaking journal. How stupid. Why am I going to journal? And I started journaling and it just started to pour out of me.
Wow.
So by the time I left rehab, like I had a full notebook of journaling of like everything from when my high school years all the way through.
Wow.
And I was a journalism major in college and a writer and stuff. So like I was good at it, I guess,
Sure.
right?
Yeah.
And I just continued it when I got out. And then once like I started to share more or whatever, and then I was like, people are asking me to guest on their podcasts. And I was like, okay, and like, and the more I did it, I said, I love this.
Yep.
I love to share. I love, So it just kind of happened organically. And the book, more or less, I had probably finished like 6 to 8 months out of rehab with no real intention of doing anything with it. It was just sitting there,
Right.
And then, once I was doing the podcast and once I was doing other things, I thought maybe I'll share this. Maybe I'll put that out there, And so I sent it over to my agent to read, and he got back to me. He's like, dude, I read it in one shot. And he's like, first of all, I hate you for never telling me any of this.
Yeah.
That like you didn't let me help you.
Right.
He's like, but like also, wow, like that you got through everything you got through. And he said, listen, if you ever want to put this out there, I'll help you and I'll make it happen. So, he started to feel around a little bit and one thing led to another, and there it was,
Things moving quick for you there. That's amazing.
it did, and my therapist is telling me to pump the brakes quite a bit,
Yeah.
because there's a lot, like my relationship with my kids is off the charts, right? And it was from day one when I came back.
Oh.
Because for the first time, we always talk about being present. Like for the first time, I was present. And although my kids could never articulate what was different, they felt it.
Sure.
And they were all over me all the time. It wasn't just me taking them outside to play. It was like they were hanging on me. They wanted to be close to me. They wanted to be, I mean, you could just feel it. And it's, first of all, that was the best feeling in the world.
Ugh. is
And
the
it was for the first time I wasn't trying to be a good dad. I
right.
just was,
Yes.
you know? And that's the most rewarding part of all of it. But, and that has continued. The relationship with my wife takes a lot of work. She knew me for 16 years as an alcoholic.
Right.
Now this new guy walked through the door, right? And there's so much healing that needs to be done. We communicate way better. We go to counseling. She trusts me sometimes. She doesn't trust other things. There are personality defects, let's call them, that are still there. I think that both of us thought would be gone with the alcohol, but it turns out, no, that's a little bit of who I am. Like, that
Sure.
needs to be fixed too.
Hell yes.
So there's this whole process. So, like, to go back to what I was saying, you know, my therapist says a little bit, hey, pump the brakes once in a while. You still got tons of work to do,
Yes.
you know, and I'm aware of that. So I try to be very careful to share my experience
Yes.
and not tell anybody what to do.
Right.
Because I don't know what you should do.
Right.
All I can tell you is this is what I did and I'm loving my life, you know, but I'm no expert. I'm an expert in me, you know, and that's it.
100%. And that's, you know, that's so important too. And that's me too. Like if someone asks me, like, what do I do? Which, you know, now I'm getting asked that a lot more often, right? And I'm sure you can probably attest to it as well, especially with all the people that in your industry and people you know. And all we can do is tell them our story, tell them what happened to me. You know, like, what do I do? And it's like, well, this is what I did, you know, and I can't tell you what to do. You know, there's no answer, but here's what happened to me. And maybe you can relate to some of it, right? And that's what you hope, right? I think that's the, you know, the gist of 12 of quote unquote, you know, 12 stepping someone. It's sharing your experience, your strength and hope with someone else, sharing where you were and what happened, what it's like now, and that they can pick up on it and they can grasp it and give it a, you know, give it a try, right? Because the way they're living their lives isn't working. But that's so important. What you said is all you can do is share. And I love, you know, how you're talking about your therapist and you know, things are moving fast for you. I say this a lot, like things could be moving fast and there could be tons going on, which is okay as long as I don't sort of succumb to it and I just kind of stay in the middle of the boat too. Like I can be have not much going on in certain times, then I have just tons of stuff to it. And as long as I don't like succumb to it and doesn't, you know, dominate the day, if you will, and I stay sort of in the middle of the boat. Like I say this a lot, like, you know, I'd love to, you know, pedal to the metal in as calm of fashion as possible. Like, you know, right in the middle of the boat, I guess is how I say it. But so I totally relate to it. And shout out also to journaling. And this is someone that, you know, I did well early in school, barely graduated high school when it was time. I did a couple semesters of junior college. So I don't have any like writing background, but I recently started journaling and I started journaling at the end of the day. And it's been so eye-opening to me because it's really, you know, like the same topic. People ask me, hey, can you, I need some help. I'm struggling with something and maybe I'll go meet someone for lunch and you have a really cool, deep conversation about life and about addiction and alcoholism. You know, like, wow, that was cool to be available and so grateful that I'm receiving these phone calls that people are, you know, looking to me that I can maybe help them. But it wasn't until the end of the day when I like sat down and like reflected on the conversation, reflected on where I am, like you said earlier, like be proud of ourselves. And, you know, Dan, I wasn't, not only was I not getting any of those phone calls, you know, 18 plus years ago, like I was the last person, I wasn't even on a radar, right? So to be thought of as someone that can help, you know, but journaling really, and that's where it like really opened it up to me. Like, wow, I'm gonna keep doing this. And I've been doing it at the end of the day. And I'm just sitting here kind of typing out my stuff. And, you know, your greatest accomplishment in life just might be being a sober dad and husband. And you know what? I am okay with it. Like I'm going 10-year-old daughter father dance tonight at
Hell
school.
yeah.
I'm sleeping on the Intrepid tomorrow with the Cub Scouts. Like, dude, those are gifts, man. Like that makes
You
fun.
know, the pandemic started and
Yeah.
I'm stuck at home,
Yeah.
just a dad, just a husband. I would give anything for that now.
Right? Yeah, I know.
It's like that's what I want to be because I recognized I had all this stuff around me in my life, but I was always chasing something else.
Yes.
Always. When everything I actually wanted and needed was right there.
Yeah.
But I was looking right over it at all this other stuff. To your point about journaling, just for anyone who's thinking about it, it's like, because I know it's like, oh God, am I really going to sit down and write whatever it is?
Yeah.
Just like everything else, just take it one little piece at a time, one day at a time is the ultimate mantra, right?
Absolutely.
But anything, you treat it that way, just 2 minutes. You can certainly sit down with a pad and a piece of paper, or your computer or however you want to do it. 2 minutes.
Yep.
Write for 2 minutes. And then you can stop. And that's all you have to do today, tomorrow, the next, whatever. Some days that 2 minutes might turn into 10 minutes, might
Right.
turn into a half hour. Who knows? That's all you got to do is 2 minutes. Certainly you have 2 minutes. And it turns into the most rewarding experience.
Yeah, that's what I've been
And
finding. And again, I'm new to it.
like your point, like things move, can move fast and things happen, whatever. I know you probably talk about this all the time, whatever. My morning routine, that's everything to me. It sets up my whole day.
Yep.
And I know that I need to do that for me. Everything else that comes at me during the day, I can handle
Yep.
if I do that morning thing. So it starts the night before because I make sure I go to bed
Does
early.
I agree. It starts
So
right before.
I'm a bed at, I'm in I'm asleep at 10 o'clock. It's like my 12-year-old daughter tucks me in out of the time.
Love
But
it.
I go to sleep at 10 because I know I'm getting up at 4:55 because I'm getting 2 hours of my prayer, my meditation, my reading, stuff like that. And then, and I try not to look at my phone
Yes.
until about maybe 40, 50 minutes in. Like I'm getting further and farther. Started at 10 minutes, I'm
Right.
pushing it out. And now I'm at like 40, 50 minutes, and I start my day this way, and I'm ready. Like I feel good, I'm in the right space mentally, and I'm just now once everyone else wakes up, let's go. It's so important.
I love that. And that's so important how you said it too, is baby steps, right? Like get 1% better each day if you could. 1% better each week, maybe, right? But just give yourself, and I love how you said, he's with your phone. Me too. I try to have my phone not near me for a good chunk of time, and it keeps getting a little bit longer out, right? And me too. Like my morning routine is constantly working on it. Like I
Oh,
want it
yeah.
to evolve into, but again, just to back up also, like me too, first thing I do is I say prayers. I'm on my knees in prayer. Like remember it was the suggestion was, Gary, put your shoes underneath your bed. And I was like, well, why? Because first thing I do is hit your knees as soon as you get out of bed. That's what I mean. Like this stuff starts to make sense, right?
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
then prayers, the earliest prayer was, Gary, you know what you should pray for tomorrow? Just pray that you don't drink today. And if you don't drink today, at the end of the day, say a prayer in thanks and gratitude. And that's what I did. And I remember I went, oh my God, I didn't drink today. And maybe that worked. And I did it again the next day. And just like everything else, my prayers have evolved, but that prayer is part of my prayers to this day. And yeah, I keep saying it, but if you go back and tell, 20-something-year-old Gary, this is what your morning does, this is what you do, like, man, what happened to him? But
Dude,
we're wrong, right? The truth is it's really the most beautiful thing that's ever happened.
you say 20-year-old Gary, tell 40-year-old Dan that he's gonna meditate or do a breathing exercise. I'd be like,
Yes.
get out of here.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. I love it. And I'm trying to evolve. Like I'm trying to walk out. It's pretty cold out here. I'm in the Northeast. I'm in New York. And like, hey, go out and barefoot and get grounded in the earth and do some, like, you know what? I know. Sounds pretty cool, actually. I think I'm gonna try to do that. All this
Yeah.
crazy but not crazy stuff. It's all part of the self-discovery for ourselves, right? And again, I think we started this. Like, if you just white knuckle it and you're just to stop drinking, there's so much more to your life, right? There's so much more for you, and that's what, and we said at the beginning too, right? It's, we share our stories, but I think it's so important to share where we are now and look at where we are now and look at where we're headed or look where, like I'm 49 years old and I have like more like hopes and dreams and
Oh.
goals than I ever have in my whole life. And I owe it all to my sobriety. And I think it's great. I do. I love it.
And you actually accomplish them.
I know you
Like
actually get stuff done. Yeah.
that's what's so fantastic. It's They told me about one day at a time when I was in rehab, and I holy roll my eyes, like one day at a time, shut up with that, you know? And it turned out to be so true. It's like the overwhelming fact of like, I'm never going to drink again. You know, when you first hear that, holy cow, how am I going to do anything?
Yeah.
How am I going to go to a Yankee game?
Right.
How am I going to hang out with the boys? How am I going to golf? How am I going to have a romantic dinner? How am I going to do anything?
Yeah.
You know, and how, when my daughter gets married, I'm not going to toast, you
Right.
know, champagne to, oh my God, like, no,
Yes.
just today.
Jeez.
I just don't have to drink today.
That's it.
And when I realized how simple that could be, I started carrying that over into every aspect of my life. And it's these things we were just talking about. Like, I mean, if you could see me do a breathing exercise, you would laugh your ass off. Like, it's ludicrous, you know? It's like, I am no expert at this stuff. But I'm like, you know what? Just give it a little try. Just
Yeah.
today, try something for 30 seconds. And then all of a sudden, before I know it, I'm at 3 minutes. And then I'm at 10 minutes. Like, it's the same thing with meditation, you know?
Same
And
thing.
journaling, 2 minutes, you know, you'll build towards it. But also these goals that you just mentioned. I'm 47 years old. I have bigger dreams and goals than I ever had in my life now.
Love it.
But instead of looking at them and being like, holy crap, how am I ever going to accomplish that? Like, that's just such a big thing. All I look at is, well, what do I need to do today to take one little inch closer to that goal?
Really
And
easy.
it's amazing. In 6 months, it's like, boom, I'm like halfway there.
It's amazing when you put it that way, right? And you focus on just laying that one brick a day. That's it.
That's
Just
it.
take one step each day. You know,
Yep.
all of it's so important. Same thing, I mean, across the board, you describe meditation. Like, can't, you know, this brain can't sit still for 2 seconds, you know, let alone 2 minutes. You know, start for 1 minute. And that's how it started. You know, and now I can really get into it. Now I'm like, I crave for like that deep sort of like bliss, you know,
Yeah.
want to be the Jedi and just really, you know, have the visualization and the meditation and just be present, you know. And again, it started as nothing, you know. And I think that's such an important to share with people, right? And I'm certainly guilty of it. I'll look at something and be like, oh, I want the end product, right? Like, I want to be able to jump in and sit there for 30 minutes and be bliss and be zen. And that's just not how it works, nor should it. It's the journey. It's how we work to get there.
Yeah.
Think it's super important that you share that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's because there are guys like you. You've been sober, you said 18 years.
Going on 18, actually in May 13th, the day after you, bud.
That's awesome, man. Congratulations.
Thanks. You
But there's
too.
like there's things, there's wisdom, you know, there's experience that you have. But I'm like, oh man, like I wish I had that. You know, it's like I watch what some other people do. I'm like, oh man, I wish I was like that. I wish I was doing that with yoga, or I wish I was doing, you know, these different things. Dude, just all I got to do is what I need to do, my little part today. I'll get there, you
That's it.
know, little by little.
I'm here to tell you though, when you do get to 18 years, like you're still going to be going, oh man, I wish I had that. What that? I want to go deeper. Like it doesn't, and you don't think like, oh, I'm the guy with 18 years. I'm the one with the wisdom. We're still searching for it, right? It's still an education. It's still a process. It's still a growth process. And it's amazing. It's grateful alcoholic here, you know, as we said at the beginning.
That's it, man. That's it.
Dan, where can we find you? You put out some great stuff. We know the podcast. If I'm being honest, podcast, we're going to put all of your stuff. We're going to put your book all of the, in the show notes as well. But where can we find you? Where's the best place to follow you?
Well, like you said, if I'm being honest, for the podcast and the book, my website, dancarity.com, and you know, on all the social feeds, Instagram, TikTok, all that fun stuff.
Gotcha.
You know, where I come and go. I have my fun with it.
You know, it's funny. I asked that at the end, like, you know, where can we find you? And I'm kind of chuckling to myself. Like, Dan's pretty easy to find. I think everyone can find him. Everybody knows where Dan is. Like, no, that was a great question. But Dan, you know, we said it from the beginning, man. Like, the amazing people we get to meet here. You too. Like, I, you said it too. Like, you enjoy it, right? You really love this stuff, and that I found that as well. Like, I could talk about this stuff all day, and I have sincere, authentic, real. I enjoy having these conversations, and I think they're super important. And I'm so grateful that we are connected. I'm so grateful that you share your story and to be in this on this Recover Out Loud community together, you know, side by side, bud. And I appreciate all that you do.
Absolutely, Gary. I messaged you last night and saying, hey, are we still on for
Yeah,
tomorrow? Where the
right.
old Dan would have been saying, hope he says no. I hope he says no. You know, you were like, yeah, man, we're on. I was like, awesome. Like, I knew now I'm gonna have a good morning. I know it's gonna be a good day. We'll have a great conversation. I love this, man. So thank you for having
Great.
me.
No, thanks
Let
for
me
being
share.
here. No, please. Thanks for being here. We'll have to do this again. We're gonna follow up for sure. And thanks for all you do, Dan. Thanks for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you,
God
man.
bless and talk soon.
Thank you for tuning in to another powerful episode of the Begin Again podcast. We sincerely appreciate your time and support. We hope that today's conversation has ignited a spark within you, affirming that recovery is not only attainable, but can also be a wellspring of strength and resilience. Our ultimate goal is to make a difference in someone's life every single day. By sharing these stories of redemption, we strive to empower you and inspire you to unlock your fullest potential, facilitate positive transformations, and contribute to creating a better future for yourself, for your loved ones, and the world at large. If you know someone who could benefit from listening to our show, please share it with them. And if you resonate with our mission and feel compelled to do so, we would greatly appreciate your support through a 5-star review, following us on Instagram, and subscribing to our YouTube channel, The Begin Again Podcast. The more positive reviews we receive and the wider our message spreads, the greater our collective ability to help others realize that change is possible in their own lives. Thank you once again for being a part of our community. May you be blessed on your own journey of personal growth and transformation.